You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
A new report published by the Human Rights Commission raises concerns about the legal and human rights of patients in aged care facilities. The publication, This Is Not My Home, considers legal and ethical issues around residential care for older people when care is provided without the person's consent. I spoke to legal counsel Janet Anderson-Bideau, the Human Rights Commission's chief legal advisor, about this report, asking what does it mean for aged care patients?
What the report is, it's a compilation of papers from a number of different people who have different perspectives on the issue of people being placed in secure dementia units without their consent or permission. So we've got papers from a district court judge, academics, an ethicist, practicing lawyers and several clinicians. And they've all got different views on this issue and different perspectives. And what we've done is we've collected these views together and published them in a report.
So it's a difficult topic, looking at levels of consent, particularly around dementia. How do we make sure that dementia patients are being well cared for, but in their own capacity of consent?
It's a really tricky issue, and that's what these papers are looking at. So obviously there are points in the progression of an illness where people may not be able to safely stay at home or to look after themselves or to even stay in the community with a high level of support. So there's likely to always be situations where people who experience quite severe dementia or other types of illnesses like that need some extra care. But what we're concerned about is that with this type of care, there aren't really clear independent legal checks in the process to make sure that it's only being used when it's really appropriate, and also that even if someone is not fully capable of making their own decisions, that there are processes that take their views into account to the greatest extent possible.
Right. So what are the current safeguards, if any?
Well, there are a few different pathways at the moment, and what we have done with this report is we've identified some potential issues with the law, but also some areas where there's practice and policy problems as well. So at the moment, you can go to the district court and you can get what's called a personal order under the Protection of Personal and Property Rights Act. So that is when a court will appoint an independent lawyer to look at a situation and make a decision about whether it's actually appropriate for a person to have to live somewhere where they don't want to live, because there's safety concerns or care level concerns. So that is one pathway, and that provides a very good degree of oversight or independence around the process to make sure it's being used appropriately. One of the problems that there is that the delays in the court system mean that sometimes that process can take up to 6 months, which is not ideal at all, given the sorts of situations that you're dealing with here. One of the other pathways is that people, when they are competent and capable of making their own decisions, they can execute what's called an enduring power of attorney. So they can give the legal authority to someone else, usually a family member, to make decisions on their behalf if they're not able to. So again, this process can work quite well, but some of the practical problems that are identified by the authors are that many people don't have enduring powers of attorney. They're quite expensive to set up. You have to see a lawyer. They can cost hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars to put in place. And also there's problems with the people who might be appointed as an attorney not necessarily understanding that their legal obligations are to do what is right for the person concerned rather than what might be the attorney might think is the best thing or the simplest thing or the most expedient thing to happen. But there's a very, very large group that have been identified where neither of those processes have been utilised.
Right. So do you start to run into issues where the power of attorney has been given to someone and, put a family member into aged care facilities, but then the patient potentially doesn't want to be there or tries to revoke consent? Is there issues around that?
Yeah, potentially there can be issues, and that's one of the things that have been highlighted here, that there isn't a clear pathway or framework, and there isn't a clear independent process in place for making sure that these processes are only utilised when they should be. There have been a few cases where people have actually been appropriately entered into a facility or admitted into a facility, but then actually got to the point where they've actually recovered a degree of capability themselves and perhaps should no longer be there. But because there's no ongoing review process, that's not necessarily picked up. So, for example, if you were in a secure mental health unit, being held under as a compulsory patient under the Mental Health Act, there's very clear review points in the process, like every few weeks or every 6 months. And you've also got district inspectors, which are independent people who are appointed to go into these facilities and just make sure that they can deal with complaints that might be raised by the individuals concerned, or make sure that it's appropriate that they continue to be detained.
Right, and so you mentioned there is no independent review process. So if there were one, what would that sort of look like?
Well, there's a number of different formats that it could take. And again, the different contributors in this report have some different options on that. But Alison Douglas has done a lot of work and looked at what is in place overseas, particularly in the UK. And there's also quite a strong argument for perhaps having something that isn't even as formal as the district court, which we know is overloaded and deals with a lot of cases, but maybe some sort of administrative tribunal that provides just an independent check and balance in the process can be accessed quite quickly and is not too intimidating or difficult for the individuals concerned to navigate. And I think it's also important to remember that the aged care providers do a really good job as well. And this is not necessarily about the quality of the care that's provided, but it's the fact that people, the right to liberty is really, really important. We all take for granted the ability to go where we want to go or to live where we want to live and do what we want to do. So when you're putting someone in a unit where they can't make those decisions, you have to be really sure that it's the right thing to do and the only option. One of the quite well-known quotes in this area is by Baroness Hale from the UK, and she said, "A gilded cage is still a cage. It doesn't matter how wonderful your environment is or your situation is, you just really need to make sure that it's appropriate for someone to have their liberty curtailed in that manner."
Absolutely, that's a very apt description. And so looking at the report, it tends to mention that there aren't a lot of numbers in terms of looking into whether there is consent or not from the patients. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's interesting, and that's one of the important papers in this series from Dr. Mark Fisher, where he's done an audit and actually looked at this issue. And what he found is quite consistent with similar studies overseas, that there's not a clear legal authority in the vast majority of cases that mean that people should be held where they are. So it's not necessarily saying that people shouldn't be in those facilities. It's just the importance of being clear around what legal basis they are being detained on. And that's really important for the providers themselves, because they obviously all want to do the right thing. It's also important for the individuals who don't have a voice, who aren't necessarily able to express their views, or when they do, they're not heard. So it's really, really important that we actually look into this issue further and come up with some good solutions.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned internationally that there isn't a lot of legal basis. Is there anywhere that is a good model, or is it just an across-the-board sort of thing?
Well, again, I think it's probably a question that Alison Douglas, who's the guru in this area, could definitely talk about in more detail. But there are overseas jurisdictions where they have administrative tribunals or public guardians, like some states in Australia. There's also what's called deprivation of liberty safeguards in the UK. So there are other models that we can look at, or there's also things that we might want to do here that are a bit different, but which better meet the needs. And I think it's not just necessary legislative change, it's also looking at some of the process issues with the current frameworks that we have in place to help make them work better and make them more accessible for people so that they can do what they need to do when they need to do it.
So the biggest solution that you see is an independent review process that is easily accessible. Do you think there's anything else that could improve the situation?
Well, one of the things that a number of the authors touch on is the importance of making sure that the clinical workforce, both in hospitals and community services and also in the aged care facilities, and also family members who may be appointed as attorneys, that they actually really understand how they can best support the individuals who are at the centre of the process. So what can they do to help them express their preferences to the greatest extent possible? Maybe there's not really a question about whether someone needs a higher level of care, but they might be able to make decisions about where they'd like to go if there's a choice of facilities. They might like to still be involved in the decision making as to the greatest extent that they can. And I think the important thing to remember is that any one of us could be in this situation, particularly as we age. And so it's really important that we get the process right and that we make sure that we do the best we can for this population group.
Absolutely. Well, that was the last of my questions. Was there anything else that you'd like to add to our conversation today that I might not have touched on?
I don't think so. I just would encourage you to read the report. I know it is quite lengthy and it is, you know, it is one of those sort of technical ones, but they're really important issues and it's just really good to be having some discussion around them and highlighting the sorts of problems that can come up so that, you know, hopefully we can make some progress and make some changes.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.